We're starting here on the top of Yudal and Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Ashuchet b'Shabbat uviyom haKippurim, afal pi shemitchayev b'nafsho shchitato k'shera." So when a person does or performs shchita on Shabbat or on Yom HaKippurim, in both instances where he is mitchayev b'nafsho on Shabbat with skila or with karet, and with Yom HaKippurim it's mitchayev b'karet, nevertheless, the shechita is a good shechita, and the animal is edible. Tosfos asks a very basic question in this instance, which is, what do you mean it's a kosher shechita? We learned in the beginning of the Masechta that a person that's a mumar cannot be shochet. And here you have someone who's a mumar l'chalel Shabbatot. Someone who's a mumar l'chalel Shabbatot, his shechita is not kshera. So Tosfos gives two answers. One answer, he says, is that there's a difference between b'farhesia v'b'tzina, which is what we saw earlier in the Masechta, that a mechalel Shabbatot, or someone who's a mumar l'chalel Shabbatot, has to be someone who does a b'farhesia. Does a b'tzina, he does not acquire that status of a mumar l'chalel Shabbatot, and therefore his shechita would be okay. The other answer that Tosfos gives is that in these other instances, we're talking about a case where a person is on a continuous basis, or a constant basis, is a mumar l'chalel Shabbatot. But a person who does it one time is not considered to be a mumar l'chalel Shabbatot. Over here, we violated Shabbat one time. We don't classify him as a mumar l'chalel Shabbat, and therefore a shechita remains okay. Someone who's a mumar l'chalel Shabbatot, the definition of that is that it's a person who does it on a repetitive basis, on a continuous basis, and then he's a mumar. But the first time a person does that, that does not classify him as a mumar. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna, Dorosh Chir Barav, Mishmei Derav. So Chir Barav learned the name of Rav, Asura Ba'achila L'yoma. The fact that we said the Shechita is Kshera, that's only after that day passes. Meaning for the day itself, obviously on Yom HaKippurim, it's Asur Ba'achila. But even on Shabbat, it's Asur Ba'achila until you clear through the day of Shabbat itself. Benaspin Chebre'a L'meimar, and the Bnei Beit Midrash got together to say that Rabbi Yehuda, that this statement by Rav, that this Mishnah applies only after the day itself, meaning that on Shabbat it remains Asur, that only post-Shabbat does the Shechitato Kshera, just like by Yom HaKippurim, it only be post-Yom HaKippurim that Shechitato Kshera, is because Rav believes that the author of this Mishnah, or this statement of Rav, is a Libud to Rabbi Yehuda. And now the Gemara is going to go and try to figure out, hi, Rabbi Yehuda. Which Rabbi Yehuda is it that we are speaking about over here? So Tosfos just points out that if the Gemara assumes that Rav's statement that the Mishnah over here means that Shechitato Kshera only means post-Shabbat, that means during Shabbat itself it's Asura, that's only according to Rabbi Yehuda, that means according to the Rabbanon that it's totally fine. That according to the Rabbanon it won't be a problem of eating it on Shabbat itself. So it says, well, wait a minute, you do Shechit on Shabbat, behind Shechitato Kshera, how are you going to eat this animal? You're missing Melicha. What about Melicha? What about the fact that you have to salt the animal to remove the blood? And we know Melicha is one of the Av Melachot on Shabbat. How could you end up with a kosher animal or Shechitato Kshera over here? So Tosfos answers, one possibility is that he went ahead, he did Melicha. He did, just like he did Shechita on Shabbos, he also did Melicha on Shabbos, and he gets around the problem. Inami, Tosfos says, that only time that dam is a problem is when the dam comes out of the meat. The dam that is Nivla Be'ivarim, which the Gemara in other places says Dama Nivla Be'ivarim is still Dam and is Asur to eat it. Tosfos says that's only when it exits the piece of meat that you have there. As long as the blood is contained within the meat itself, and if you eat it in that state, it'll be fine. And it's not a problem of Achilat Dam. Because of that, Tosfos then concludes, number one, that a person, if he ate the meat raw, would not have to salt it, because the Dam that's inside won't come out, and the Dam that's inside is not Asur. Number two, Tosfos also points out, is that when it comes to tzli, when it comes to roasting, we know that the roasting removes the blood that is contained within the aver, and through the roasting process, not only takes it out, but singes it and gets rid of it. The problem with bishul, if someone cooks it, then the blood will exit the piece of meat, but then be in the fluids that are around it, and then it'll be reabsorbed into the meat, and it'll be problematic. But by tzli, that does not happen. Anything that exits is consumed by the fire that's there. And therefore, Tosfos says that by tzli, when it comes to roasting of meat, one would not require melicha, that you don't need salting. Even though our minhag is to salt it even when there's a case that we're going to roast it, nevertheless, it's not necessary for tzli to have the meat be salted before it's actually roasted. And that actually has a certain nafkaminat halacha. We actually apply this for certain instances, like by kaved, by livers, where the reason that we eat the liver, even though you can't get rid of the dam, is because we do it bitzli and not through melicha. But another important place where it's used is actually in places where they, for instance, didn't salt the meat properly, or in places where they were somech on a heter, what's called basar kafui, frozen meat. That there's a din or halacha that meat must be salted within the first 72 hours after it's been nishchat. But after that, the blood gets so absorbed into the evarim that the salt won't help to remove it. So that salting process has to be done within those first 72 hours. If it's not done then you can't make up for it. There is a way to get over that, and that's what we're just discussing now, is tzli. That even though you can't get it out through salting the process, you can still get it out through tzli, through roasting the meat. There are some places where they're somech on a heter to freeze the meat. They freeze the meat immediately, and therefore they slow down the biological process of the blood being absorbed into the meat. Now the halacha, and the Rama brings this down in Yoredeya, that it's irrespective of why the time elapses, meaning that even if you're able to slow down the biological process, nevertheless the 72 hours are the 72 hours, and therefore you have to do it within the first 72 hours. These people claim, and their deya is, that the freezing process slows the biological absorption, and therefore it's as if the 72 hours don't pass. So basar that was prepared in this way, this is called basar kafui. The way around this, if you're not somech on that heter, which generally we are not, the way around this is to eat that meat, but tzli is to roast the meat, because then roasting the meat obviates the need for melicha. So even though these individuals or these companies did not salt the meat immediately, nevertheless, you can get around it by roasting the meat, because then you don't need melicha in that case. So if you go to a grill or something of that sort, you could eat that type of meat. Now, basar kafui, which was more well known many years ago in Israel, which is important for Argentina, actually had other issues with it. Besides this halachic issue of basar kafui, there are also questions about the shechita itself and the speed of shechita that was being done there. There are other problems beyond that, but getting over the basar kafui issue is possible, and getting over the problem of not salting immediately is possible through tzli, roasting. There's a very interesting Tosfot that has implications over here, because if you believe that Rav's statement is only according to Rabbi Yehuda, that means that according to the Chachamim, it'd be mutter to eat on Shabbos. And how do you eat on Shabbos if you haven't salted it? So again, Tosfot either gives one answer, is that it was salted. The other answer is, and important Tosfot, that blood is only problematic when it exits the meat, and therefore, if you eat it raw, then you don't have a problem because the blood's never exited the meat. But more importantly, if you roast it, and again, he says here you don't have to roast it so well through and through, so you have to roast it so that it becomes to an edible state. Roasting overcomes the problem of melicha, and melicha is not necessary in those instances. The other thing to note here that Tosfos points out is that the Gemara begins here, Amar Rav Huna, Dorash Chiya Barav. That means that Rav Huna is quoting something from Chiya Barav. Now, everywhere else in Shas, and that's what Tosfos points out over here, that Rav Huna was older than Chiya Barav. And so why is it over here that Rav Huna is quoting Chiya Barav? Every other time, it's Chiya Barav that's quoting Rav Huna. Rav Huna was a Talmud of Rav. So Tosfos over here leaves it, Bitzarach Yoni, leaves it as a Tema. Tosfos on the previous Amud on Gimel Aleph actually asked this question in a different context and mentions that there must be two Rav Hunas. It must have been a Rav Huna that was much younger, and probably the one that we're talking about here that was quoting Chir Barav. But there was also another Rav Huna who was the Talmud of Rav, who was older than Chir Barav, and obviously that's not the Rav Huna that we're speaking about over here. So now the Gemara says, Hi Rav Yehuda. Which Rav Yehuda are we speaking about here? When we say that Rav made a statement according to Rav Yehuda, that's what the Bnei Beit Midrash said, and which Rav Yehuda are we talking about? So I'm Rabbi Abba. Their first suggestion is Rav Yehuda de Chachanahi. It's Rav Yehuda that's based in Hachana, basically Rav Yehuda of Moksa. Tetanan, we have a Mishnah that's at the way end of Maris Shabbos. It says, Mechatchim et hadiluim lifnei ha-behema. You can cut up or chop up the gourds in front of a behema. Ve'et ha-nevela lifnei ha-klavim. And you can also chop up a nevela for the klavim, for the dogs to eat. So, Rehudo merim lo'ita nevela meru Shabbat. If the nevela didn't pre-exist before Shabbat, then it's a surah. Then it doesn't work. L'fisha en amina mukhan. Because it's not from that which is prepared. Let's understand this Mishnah. First of all, Rashi comments over here. It's actually a machloket between Rashi and Tosafot over here, as well as in Shabbat and other places. Rashi says over here, the diluim that we're talking about here were tlushim. They were already removed. They were already picked before Shabbat. The only question here is that they weren't ra'oi. They were too hard for the animals to eat. And therefore we say over here, mechatchim et diluim, is he allowed to cut them up to make them soft enough or edible or ra'oyim for the animals to consume. So the question at hand in this Mishnah is a question of tircha. Are you allowed to make that extended effort or extra effort in order to provide the food for the behema? And the Mishnah says, yes, you're allowed to do that. Number two, there's a second statement in the Mishnah, which is a nevela. It's allowed to cut up a nevela for dogs. Now, this nevela happened on Shabbos itself. It died on Shabbos, and now it's not ra'oi for Adam, because they didn't have shechita. Only thing it is ra'oi for klavim, and therefore you're allowed to cut it up and provide it to the klavim. Rabbi Yehuda says, wait a minute, that's not the case. Yehuda Merim, lo'ita nevela me'er Shabbat. If it wasn't an aveilah before Shabbat, then asura, then it's no good. Because then it's muksa. I mean, it's muksa because if it wasn't an aveilah before Shabbat, when it came into Shabbat, the animal was still possibly ra'oi for achilat adam. It could have been eaten by a human being. Now that it died, its status has changed. It's moved from being ra'oi for an adam now to being ra'oi just for klavim. That's muksa, and therefore you can't cut it up because it became muksa on Shabbos. Because Ben HaShmashot, at the time of Ben HaShmashot, it was not ro'oi leklavim. He suggests, Rabbi Yehuda says, that it must have been only ro'oi, or has to be ro'oi, from beforehand. It means it has to die before Shabbat. That means that Ben HaShmashot, it was ro'oi for the klavim, and then when you're cutting it on Shabbat, you're doing nothing different. You are just cutting up the nevela that existed or pre-existed for Shabbat. That's the way Rashi explains it with the diluim. The Rebbeinu Tam, on the other hand, explains, we're talking about something that was picked on Shabbos itself. The diluim, the gourds that we're talking about here, are not the gourds that already ra'oi before Shabbat, but rather gourds that were picked on Shabbos itself, because he says it's dumya shin the nevela, that it has to be parallel with the second case in the Mishnah. Just like the second case in the Mishnah, we're talking about something that became an nevela on Shabbos. Over here too, we're talking about gourds that were picked on Shabbos itself. Well, if that's the case, then we have to deal with the question, well, a picking on Shabbos. Why is the Isser over here a problem of muksa? Why isn't the problem here a problem of a picked, or working with a picked fruit on Shabbos? And now we know from other places, there are two restrictions or two problems with actually picking fruit on Shabbos. One is brought down in the Gemara in Beitza, that we're worried about if we allow you to pick up fruit that fell off the tree on Shabbos, or something that's separated on Shabbos, that Shema Yalevi Yitlosh. We're worried about you going back and picking in the future. So we don't allow you to use or to get in contact or utilize things that were picked on Shabbos, because we're afraid that you'll come in the future to pick from things that are attached. That's number one. The other reason that we have it is because of what's called Gugurot Utsimukim, which is that Gugurot and Tsimukim are things that are fruits that are left out to dry. The fruits that are left out to dry are put on the muksa. They're putting up on the roof to dry out. That's where the word muksa comes from. Muksa, mikatze min adat, is something that you put out of mind. Fruits that you are going to dry out, you have no intention of using them at all over the Shabbat period. And because of that, they're muksa. So the same thing over here. Things that are attached and coming into Shabbat, a person is mikatze midato, he puts them out of his mind entirely. And therefore, when they picked on Shabbos, they're not within the realm of items that are ra'ui on Shabbos because you were mekatza them min adat. So that's the problem with picked items. So now over here, what's going on? Diluim that were actually picked on Shabbos. How could it be that they're just also because of muksa? There should be also shema yavobi yutlosh. Maybe you'll come and pick a fruit again. Or it should be also because it's kegrot v'tzimukim, grot v'tzimukim, even Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't hold the muksa, who's the Tanakama in this Mishnah against Rabbi Yehuda, who doesn't think generally there's a problem of muksa. Even he agrees by kegrot v'tzimukim that there is a problem of muksa. So Tosa says, we must be talking about a case here that it was not asur because of Shemi Yitlosh, and it's not asur because of Grugot Simukim. And he says, for instance, it is an animal. He has an animal that could have gone and eaten it off the gourd plant while it was still attached. So it was muchan for his animal. It was ready for his animal before Shabbat. And therefore, we're not worried about grugot sumukim, that you put it out of mind, because you do have it in mind. You think your animal is going to go there and eat it. And therefore, the question over here is simply a question of muksa. Number two is, the problem of Shema Yitlosh doesn't exist over here, because Tosa suggests that Shema Yitlosh might only apply by fruit. Fruits are there that are very easy to pick. Number two is, people really desire and really want fruits. That's when we wonder about Shema Yitlosh. But by gourds, which are not so easy to pick, they're very difficult to cut off. You need actually scissors to cut them off. They don't break off the plant so easily. And number two is, people don't have this strong desire for gourds. They just want to go and pluck a gourd off the tree. Therefore, we don't worry about Shema Yitlosh. For that, Tosus removes these issues and says that the case is parallel to the case in Nevela. And we're talking about a gourd that was picked on Shabbos itself. And that's the question over here. Can you be mechatech this gourd on Shabbos? Tosus at the end brings down, he says, V'od yesh tefaresh, and he there is from Farish like Rashi, which is Dari ben Nitlash me Erev Shabbos. It's actually picked on Erev Shabbos, like Rashi seems to indicate that it was already Talush. And then he says, V'chiteima maila memro. So what? Okay, then what's the Chiddush here? What's the Mishnah telling us? It was already picked before Shabbos. What's the Chiddush over here? The Chiddush is, and it's what we explained in Rashi before, is that, Kamash Molon, Deshari the Mitrach ba'uchla o Shabbi uchla, that you're allowed to put extra labor into food, or you're allowed to make it edible on Shabbos. And that would be the Chiddush of the Mishnah. And that's the way Rashi explains the Gemara. You should just be aware of the fact that our Gemara reads, Me Erev Shabbat. That the whole case here is a case of Erev Shabbat. And it's Rabbi Yehuda, Im Lo Hayta Nevela Me Erev Shabbat. Right? If it wasn't available before Erev Shabbat, Asur, Fi She'en Min HaMuchan, it's not Muchan. Now the question is, well, how is it Muchan on Shabbos at all? You can't eat these things on Shabbos. And you see down in the Tosfos here, he says, well, Erev Shabbos is what we're Goreis, and not Goreis Me'erev Yom Tov. Erev Yom Tov would make a lot more sense, because Me'erev Yom Tov would be talking about a case where it's Muchan L'Achila, a person has in mind to eat this item, and therefore when it dies and turns into Nevelah, then it's problematic. On Shabbos, nobody has in mind to eat an animal because you can't do Shechita on Shabbos. So therefore, the Mishnah seems a little strange that it says Me'erev Shabbos. If you go look in the Gemara in Shabbos, the Rivam, that's the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam's brother, the Rivam, actually suggests that the Girsa should be Me'erev Yom Tov in the Mishnah over there, and Tosfos quote that in the Gemara Shabbos. But you see the Tosfos over here is saying that the Girsa should be Me'erev Shabbos and not Me'erev Yom Tov, not like the Rivam. Ah, so why is it considered Muchan Le'Adam? How can the Gemara consider this classification or this Behema Muchan Adam, because not that it's ra'ui le'adam, because you can do shechita and you can eat it. Muchan le'adam over here is because it's something within the omedet le'adam. It's within the framework or the mindset of the person that he would eat such a behema. Right now, with all that introduction about this Mishnah, now the Gemara says, okay, let's explain this. Alma kemdo itchan me'etmo asura. Since this item wasn't prepared from beforehand, from before Shabbos, it's asur on Shabbos. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. We say, hachanami, our case here in our Mishnah. Kemdo itchan me'etmo asura. In our case, also here, the shechita that took place in Shabbos was an illegal shechita. Yes, it's shechita tok she'ruah for after Shabbos, but on Shabbos itself, it'll be muksa, just like Rabbi Yehuda says it's muksa in the Mishnah in Shabbos, he'll say that it's muksa over here, and it's be problematic. So I'm like, Abaye says back to Rabbi Ava, what are you saying? Mi domi, how can you compare the cases? Hotami kara muchani adam. The case in the Mishnah and Shabbos was that originally the animal was edible for humans or ra'ui for human consumption. As we just mentioned, that Tosfos points out that Muchan Adam here doesn't literally mean that it could be eaten by Adam because you can't shecht it on Shabbos. Muchan Adam means it's within the realm of a human consumption, meaning that people would consider eating such an animal. Now when it turns into Nevelah, it's the Muchan Klavim. So therefore, that's where Rabbi Yehuda objects. But in this case, Mikara Muchan Adam, in our case, in our Mishnah, originally, it was in the purview of Adam. V'hashta muchan Adam, and now it remains in that realm of Adam. I mean, you didn't change anything. It was okay for Adam to eat it beforehand. Now it's okay for Adam to eat afterwards. So nothing changed in our Mishnah. So maybe over here, Rabbi Yehuda would say that that is considered muchan. It's not a problem of mukso. Rabbi Abba says back to Abaye, Misvarat behema b'chayel achila omedet. Your assumption is that an animal in its lifetime is standing to be eaten. Behema b'chayel agadel omedet. That's not what the behema is. When a behema is alive, the consideration is not about being edible, not edible, because that's not even within what the thought process or the realm of what people think about an animal in that state. The animal in that state is what with a gadel, it's for mating, for reproduction, for utility, whatever the animal is using for, but you don't think about it for eating. So if that's the case, you really are changing the animal now. Beforehand, the animal was for its utility, for its production. When you shecht it, then it turns into food. So even though it was muchan le'adam and muchan le'adam, it actually changed its status over here. And that would be problematic mukso. And that would be akin to the case in Shabbat, where you change it from muchan adam to muchan klavim. They change it from being ro'oi for adam to now being ro'oi klavim, and that would also be mukso. So Abaye retorts to Rabbi Ava, well, that's a really nice explanation. But then Ihachi, Behemoth Rabbi Yehuda, Biyom Tov, Heche Shachtinon. He says, well, if that's the explanation, then according to Rabbi Yehuda, how do you ever shecht the Behemoth on Yom Tov? Going into Yom Tov, the animal's alive. Even on Yom Tov, it's alive. When it's alive, the animal is not ra'oi for achila. It's being used for its utility, for its production. And then you want to shecht it also on Yom Tov. Whoa, what happened here? You just changed its status. It should be muksa on Yom Tov. So Amar lo, so Rabbi Abba replies to Abaye and says, no. Omeret achila v'omeret legadel. While the animal is alive, it's for both. It's appropriate for production utility. It's also appropriate for being edible or for being eating. For being eaten. Nishchata, if he shechs it, huvrara. Then we have a breira, we see the mafreya, retroactively we understand the lachilo medit. That was his intent before Yom Tov, and therefore it wasn't muksa, because once he shechs it, he indicates that this animal, or the intent for this animal, was that it be eaten. Lo nishchata, in the end, if he doesn't shecht it, huvrara de la gadelo medit. Then we know that it was designated for production and utility. Well, on Shabbos, you don't have that question because there is no shechita on Shabbos and nobody would think to shecht on Shabbos. Therefore, it's automatically classified as being in the category of not being edible, not for human consumption, rather for production utility. And if he shechts on Shabbos, it should be asura. The Gemara says, wait a minute, v'had leitle the Rabbi Yehuda breira. That's a very nice explanation, but that assumes that Rabbi Yehuda holds a breira. Breira is a concept where retroactively you're able to determine the status of an item or an individual. So over here, you're trying to retroactively determine what the status of this animal is. How do we know that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold to this concept of Rema? If you think it comes out of a braita, which says, someone who purchased wine from the kutim. This is obviously before the gzeira, before we saw earlier in the Masechta, the gzeira that they put into place, that the yain of kutim was, you were not allowed to buy it. It was like buying yain from an ovid of Avodah Zarah. This has to be before that point in time. But a person who purchases yain from the kutim has to be mafrish, trumot, masrot, all of these items from it. Now, one of the big things is that it truma gedola that he has to take off. Because by Jews, even in Ama Aretz, you don't have to be mafrish truma gedola. Since truma gedola is b'mashehu, we assume that even the Ama Aretz kept it. And we have gemaras in other places with the Yochanan Kohen Gadol that they sent out and they checked. And they saw that the Ama Aretz were keeping truma gedola. So by Ama Aretz, only chashash is after truma gedola that we have to worry about what they were mafrish or not. But here, since he's buying rakuti, he has to even take off truma gedola. But he's now in a position, as Rashi says, that he doesn't have the ability to fix it because it was really close to sunset on Friday night and he didn't have time to fix it up and he wants to eat it on Shabbos, but he doesn't have the ability to be mafrish trumot to masrot on Shabbat. So what we allow him to do here is do it lemafreya. We allow him to do it retroactively, which is that he'll be able to drink but designate items in the future that will be the truma and the masrot over here. For instance, Omer, shnei lugim shani atid afrish, the two log, here we have 100, call it 100 log, and a truma is taken off based on 1/40th, 1/50th, 1/60th, and benoni is 1/50th, or 2%. So you take off 2 log to be the truma on this item. He says, in the future, I remove 2 log. And those 2 log will be the truma on this item. Harihan truma, asara, in the future, I will take off 10, maaser rishon, and they will be classified as maaser rishon. Tisha of the remainder, I will take off 9, which will be maaser sheni, umechal. And as Rashi says, since he can do this without being mafrish, we say to him, okay, fine, redeem the ma'aser sheni on the monies, vishotem yad, and then he's allowed to drink immediately. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the position of Rabbi Meir. Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, all three of these tanaim, osrim, they say, no way, you can't do this. So the assumption of the Gemara is that the reason you can't do this is because Rabbi Meir holds there's breira, that retroactively, when you determine which items you're taking off for Chumot and Ma'asrot, that is sufficient retroactively to take care of it, and you see that breira works. But the three Tanaim here, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, who reject it, and they say it's Asur. The assumption is, why is it Asur? Because they don't hold a breira. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold a breira. The Gemara answers up, Kedetani Taimo, Hatam Kedetani Taimo. There, the Gemara gives the reason. Many places, there's a sugi that shows up many places in Shas, and there the Gemara says that the reason is not because of Breira, but rather because of what they say back to Amr Lo, the Rabbi Meir. Yeah, Tamodeh, don't you agree? Shem Yivaka Nod, maybe the flask will burst. And then retroactively, actually be eating Tevil. Because if in the future he's unable to be mafrish these items, then whatever he drank until this point will be Tevil, and will retroactively be stuck in eating Tevil. Rabbi Meir responds to them and says, Amalhem, Kishivaka. I'll tell you, when it bursts. Then we can talk about it. It's not a common thing. It's a miut. It happens in infrequent circumstances. And therefore, we're not going to be choshish. We're not choshish the miut. Since it happens infrequently, we're going to assume that he's going to be able to take it off in the future. And he can't take it off. So the machloket between them is on the frequency or whether we worry about yivaka hanod, whether it will burst. That means that everybody agrees that breira works. It's just a question here of how you view the possibility in the future that this may not be carried out. So Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yossi all worry about this possibility of the node breaking, whereas Rabbi Meir is not choshesh for that problem. Hello, I'm Editani Ayo. Actually, we learned it out from a statement by Ayo. Ayo is a Talmid Chacham, one of the Chachamim. He says, Editani Ayo. Yehuda Meir, Ein Adam Matneh Ashnei Dvarim Keechad. Yo says Rabbi Yehuda believes that you can't have Breira, that you can't make a condition that looks at two items at once. The din of Eruv is that a person on Shabbat is limited to walking 2,000 amot in every direction. That's based on where his Shvita, and where the place that he started the Shabbos is. Wherever he started Shabbos, then he's entitled to walk 2,000 amot in every direction. Now, if you go to the Gemara in Erevin and the Mishnayot in Erevin, we'll learn about the fact that a city is all classified as Dalet Amot. There are all sorts of rules about this. But just basically,
The rule is that from wherever he starts his Shabbos, he has 2,000 amot in every direction. The Chachamim allowed people to establish their residence when Shabbos comes in different locations. That's through an Eruv Tchumin. They were able to move their Eruv to somewhere else, which means that they establish their place of residence somewhere else, and they get 2,000 amot from this establishment of residence. That residence has to be established Benesh Mashot. It involves placing food or bread in a certain location to establish their residence in that location. There's a situation here, which is the person is expecting someone to come to the area of the town, meaning that he has expect someone to come from the east or the west, and he wants to be able to gain more space, walking space to that direction. So if his center of living is where he was when Shabbos came in, then he only have 2,000 amot to each direction. But he wants the ability to walk 4,000 amot in one direction and then cut off the other side. That means he has to establish his shvita, he has to establish his place of residence 2,000 amot away in the direction that he wants to go. And what he does is, before Shabbat, he goes down and places bread 2,000 amot to the east, and he places down bread 2,000 amot to the west. And he says, listen, I don't know which way the chacham is coming from. The person is coming to give shir, I want to go hear him. I don't know where he's coming from. So before Shabbat, he sets out food on 2,000 amot to the east and food 2,000 amot to the west. And he says, this is, if the chacham comes from the east, then my shvita, my place of residence, is out to the east. And therefore, I'll gain 4,000 amot to the east and I won't be able to walk the west at all. On the other hand, if the chacham comes from the west, then I really establish my residence in the western side and I'll gain 4,000 amot to walk the western side, but nothing to the east. But here, he's making a condition before Shabbat that either one of those will work. We don't know what it is. Until the chacham shows up, we don't know which direction it is. Now, what happens in an instance where the chacham, two chachamim come, one comes from the east and one comes from the west? So in that choice, the person gets a choice of which one he wants to go to, and then that will retroactively determine where his shvita was. That's the basic principle that we're talking about here, that's in Erevin. Now, Ayo says, Rabbi Huda's position is such. You can't have a condition that allows you to do what you want, which means, if the chacham comes from the mizrach, eruv goes to the mizrach. Then his eruv goes to the eastern side, and that's determined. Limarav, if the chacham shows up coming from the west side, eruv goes to marav. The eruv is on the west side, and it works. If a chacham shows up both on the east and west, there are two that show up, and now he has to make a determination. Lo, that he can't do. Vavinanba, we asked on this statement of Ayo, Mashna, lekan delo. Why can't he do it? Why can't he make a decision after the fact that when the chacham comes from the east or the west, that he'll pick which one he wants to go to? Dein breira, because it must be that he holds there's no breira, and retroactively you can't make such a determination. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Then why in the first case also, mizrach or marav, even if the chacham just came from the mizrach, or he just came from the marav, that's also something that was all done on condition that the chacham showed up. But even though he laid out shvita on both sides, and then because the chacham showed up on one side, still that's something that was only determined after the fact. So why don't we say over there, ein breira? Sam Rabbi Yochan ukvar ba chacham. Now the situation here is where the chacham already came. It was already inside the tchum. He just didn't know about it. The person himself doesn't know which side the chacham came in on. But at the time that Shabbos entered, that decision was already determined because the chacham was already here. Since the chacham was already here within the area that he could reach, and he would have known, had he had the information, he would have known which one to pick, the east or west. That determination was already done on Erev Shabbos at Benesh Mashot time. But that's not true if the chacham comes from both sides. Because even if both chachamim came in before Shabbat, still the determination has yet to be made. Which side is he going to pick? Is he going to pick the east or the west? And that's a problem of Breira. And Breira, Rabbi Huda says, doesn't work. You can't choose something after the fact and have it work retroactively. And that's what the Gemara says over here. Rabbi Huda doesn't hold a Breira. We see that from this statement of Ayo, that this bright of Ayo, that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold a Breira. Well, if Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold a Breira, then the explanation that Rabbi Ava gave doesn't work. Because, as Abaye points out, there's a big difference between the Mishnah and Shabbos, where there's a problem of Muksa, because you're going from Muchan Adam to Muchan Klavim, and our Mishnah, where you're going from Muchan Adam to Muchan Adam. Rabbi says, no, I'll solve that problem. I'll say, you really think it's Muchan Adam here? That's not true. Because a behema is not Ro'ui for Achilan. That's not what it stays. It's for its utility, it's for its production, it's not for Achilan. You're changing it now from that to Achilan. So it's the same. So Rabbi challenges him and says, well, if that's the case, how do you eat an animal on Yom Tov? So he says, no, you don't understand. It's both. An animal has both a side, which is that it's for utility and production, also a side to be eaten. And that's determined by what you do on Yom Tov. If you shecht it on Yom Tov, then the truth is that it was around to be eaten. If you don't shecht it, then it's really around for its utility and production. On Shabbos, obviously, there's always utility and production because nobody eats or nobody shechts on Shabbat. So that'll solve the problem. Well, Abaye says back to him, well, that's okay. That's really nice. But that means Rabbi Yehuda holds a Breira. And Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold a Breira. We tried to prove that first from the Breita by Elokech Yem Yemen Akutim. That we rejected because there's another reason for the Machloket over here. But by then we brought the second case by Erevin. And by Erevin we showed that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold a Breira. Well, if Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold a Breira, then Rabbi Abba's explanation of the reason that Rav must be holding like Rabbi Yehuda is not because of Rabbi Yehuda of Muksa. Our Mishnah is not the problem of Muksa or a problem of Achana like we find in the Mishnah in Shabbat. It must be for a different reason, and that's what Rabbi Yosef comes to explain over here.
Hello, I'm Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef is Rabbi Yehuda the Kelim he. That what we're talking about here is Rabbi Yehuda from Kelim, meaning that Rabbi Yehuda talks about Muksa by Kelim. What's that case? It's not. We have a Mishnah in Shabbat, Kol Kelim and Italim b'Shabbat, and Keli on Shabbat, there was a utensil that was useful and was able to be used on Shabbat, Shivrehem, but then it broke. The shards, the broken piece of this Keli, Nitalin, they can be carried. They are not Muksa. Since the Kli wasn't Muksa, the shards are also not Muksa. Ubilvad, but the qualification for that is, Shiyuosim Ein Melacha, as long as they still have some utility to them. Shivre Areva, for instance, if you have a kneading trough that broke, if the shards are good enough to cover over or to use as a cover for a pitcher, great. Shivrei zechuchit, shards are broken pieces of glass. That they are a way to cover over a smaller type of utensil, which a pitcher. Rabbi Yehuda says, no. That they have to do similar type of utility that they did before. Shivrei areva, if it's a broken piece of a kneading trough, then it has to be a case where you can put into them something a thick, like porridge type of item, and it's held in there, just like the areva was used for the kneading of the dough. So too, now this piece can be used to pour into it porridge or to mix porridge inside of it. Shivrei zechuchit, the glass, latzuch l'tochan shemen. They can still put oil into them, just like they held, the glass held a liquid beforehand. Now they can still be used to hold a certain amount of liquid, like a shemen. Me'ein melachtan in. They have to do a similar type of utility to that which they did before. M'ein melacha cheret, lo. But when it comes to other work, you know, if they're able, they have other utility, but not their original utility, they're no good. Alma, from this we conclude, kevin lo de'itchan me'etmol, since they were not prepared from yesterday, l'hach melacha, for this utility, asire, they're asur. Hachanami, so to over here, our case of shechita is the same thing. Kevin lo de'itchan me'etmol, it wasn't prepared from yesterday, meaning that the assumption is that this animal will not be eaten on Shabbat. Asura, therefore it's asur. Samalei Abaye, Abaye says, midomi. How can you compare these cases? Hotomi kara kli. Over there, originally it was a kli. Vahashta shever kli. And now we're talking about a broken shard. We're talking about a broken kli. The status changed. Vahavilin nolad. And now it's nolad, something that was created on Shabbos itself. Because since the shard or the broken kli does not do the same function as the original kli, therefore you have something new here. You have something that's performing a new malacha, that's something new that's called nolad, v'asur, and therefore it's asur. Hocha, in our case over here, mikara uchla, in the beginning the animal is ra'oi la'achila, ulusof ochel, and the end when he shechs it, it's also ochel. Uchla difrutu, that's uchla that separates. It's a term that's used in the Gemara in Beitza, which means that it's a piece of the animal separated, or a piece of a larger unit separated off. So it's over here, the animal was always good for food, and now you're just breaking off a piece of it that's good to be eaten. Vishaminan lay the Rabbi Yehuda, and we know that Rabbi Yehuda holds of this, Dama Uchla de'ifrat Shapir Dami, that something when it's food that breaks off of a larger piece, that's considered okay on Shabbat. That's not considered to be mukse, since the entire item was ra'ui le'achila, meaning that animals in general are considered to be ra'uin le'achila. Since they are ra'uin le'achila, then when you shecht it on Shabbat, all you're doing is just taking off a piece of what otherwise would have been something that is classified as being ra'oi le'achila. Ditznan, and how we know that? Because, ein sochtim et haperot, mutzi mehen mashkin. Person cannot squeeze fruits on Shabbos to get liquids out of them. Vi'im yatsu, if they do come out, me'atzman asurin. If they come out by themselves, meaning that you didn't squeeze them, you didn't do shechita, but they by themselves the liquids came out, they're asur. Hudamer, you have to look at what the purpose of these fruits is. If these fruits are being designated to be eaten, then ayotzimehen mutar. The liquids that come out are okay to eat because you do not want those liquids to come out. So we don't worry about you doing schita, shema yischot, maybe you'll squeeze another item or fruit because you don't want this liquid to come out and it's actually to your detriment. On the other hand, if you'd pick these fruits for their liquid and you want to squeeze them out, then ayotzimehen asur. Anything that comes out by itself is asur because we're afraid that if allow you to consume this liquid that came out of them, that you'll go ahead and squeeze them to get liquid out. Gemara says, lavit marla.
Didn't we say about this that Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Molde Haya Rabbi Yehuda l'divrehem l'chachamim, that Rabbi Yehuda agrees to the chachamim b'salei zeitim v'anamim, when we're talking about baskets of olives and grapes. Because there, even though olives and grapes, some people pick them to eat them, nevertheless, rov b'nei adam, most people pick them for their liquid. And therefore, b'tel edato etzokol adam, then we were saying, mevatel is that. Even though he intends to eat them, nevertheless, since most people would use them for the liquids that come out of them, and the liquids that come out of them are pretty chashuv, they're very significant liquids, and that's why they were a mainstay or a staple product in terms of olive oil and wine. Therefore, we disregard what he's thinking or what he thought about eating them. And we say, well, if they came out on Shabbos, then we're worried about the fact that they came out. And Shema Yischol, so we don't allow you to drink or eat from them. Alma, what do you see from this? Came into the Schita Kaime. They could have been squeezed out. Yavdate, therefore, he has his mind on it. Meaning, even though he intends for them to be eaten, nevertheless, since most people squeeze them for the liquids, we say that not only does he have his mind to eat them, but he also has his mind for the liquids. Hachanami. Given the shkita kaimo, this animal, in the end, yes, right now it's muksa, right now it's for its utility, for its production, you can't shecht on Shabbos, but nevertheless, in the back of his mind, he has this idea that all animals are eaten, and therefore, however, somehow, if it became edible, that he would eat it. So, yohayv date, he would place his mind on it. So, Mar says, midu taimo elu l'rav. Wait a minute, we're trying to explain Rav's position here on the Mishnah. Rav says that it's usur on the Shabbos itself, only on Motzei Shabbos does it become mutar. That's Rav. And we're saying that Rav's position is based on Rabbi Yehuda. So, wait a minute. You just had an explanation of Rabbi Yehuda, but who quoted that explanation? That was Shmuel's explanation of Rabbi Yehuda. But what does Rav hold? Amar Rav, chaluk haya Rabbi Yehuda, afilu b'salei zeitim v'anavim. Rabbi Yehuda argues, even with baskets of olives and grapes, Rabbi Yehuda would argue on the Chachamim and say, if the person has intent for Achila, then the liquids are okay to eat. If he has intents for the liquids, then it's problematic, because then we worry about Shemi Yischot. And then you couldn't therefore make the quantum leap or the jump here to say, well, even though he had in mind, if we're eating them, we nevertheless say it's too bad, because most people, since they will drink it, he has his mind on the drinking as well, and it becomes problematic. And that will apply here by Behema as well, even though here he left that out of his mind because it's Shabbos. Nevertheless, it's still within his purview to eat it because that's what behemoth are used for, is for eating. That's how we drew the parallel, but that's only true if Rabbi Yehuda agrees by olives and grapes that it's a problem. But if Rabbi Yehuda believes that no fruits are a problem, that anytime you have in mind for achila, then the liquids are fine. Anytime you have in mind for drinking, then the liquids are problematic. Then you don't have that overlap and you can't make that parallel anymore, because Rabbi Yehuda is always going to hold that it's problematic. If you have in mind to eat it, then the liquids are fine, and we don't worry about Shemi Yischot. So to over here, by Shchita. But you had in mind not to eat it on Shabbos, because it's going to become Mukso. Therefore, we don't worry, or we don't have saying you had in mind also that maybe it would be eaten, or if it came about that it could be eaten, that you would eat it. Because no, it's out of your mind completely. Just like if you have in mind to eat the fruits, it's out of your mind to use them for the liquids. So to over here, when the Behemoth, if it's not really to be Shechted, then we assume that it's out of your mind entirely. This can't be the Rabbi Yehuda that we're speaking about in our Mishnah. We'll make one more attempt beforehand, and then tomorrow's daf will get us to the real Rabbi Yehuda that we're using. So, Amar Rav Sheish, Bereid Rabbi Yidi, Rabbi Yehuda Dinei Roti, because of the Tanya of a Bereid, Metaltalim Ner Chadash, of Lo Yashan. Person, when it comes to a clay, we're talking about now a clay utensil that's used to light a candle in it. When you light the candle, the oil and the lighting of the candle ruin the cheres, and they make it disgusting that you really don't want to touch it. Therefore, metaltalim ner chadash, if it's a brand new fired clay utensil that's used for a ner, over there you can use it and move around on Shabbos because it's not maus, it's not disgusting yet because it hasn't been used and hasn't had oil in it. Therefore, you can carry it on Shabbos. On the other hand, yashan, which is very disgusting and Zeb, you can't. Divrei Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda. You see, that's the relation of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda holds there's a problem of muksa because of mius. So Mar says, Imor dishmayit leila Rav Yehuda b'muksa machmat mius. The reason over there is because it's ma'us. It's disgusting. Therefore, it becomes muksa. Muksa machmat isur mishmayit leila. Who says that he holds that just because he holds there's muksa by something disgusting, things means that he also holds that there's muksa by something that's asur, like over here, where the animal's asur because you can't shecht it on Shabbos. Who says he thinks that's muksa? Tosis points out over here that this answer is simply a dechuyah. It's just a push away because we know from the Gemara and Shabbos and in Beitza and other places that muksa machmat isur is more chamur than muksa machmat mius. If you hold that mius is muksa, then you certainly hold that isur is asur. Nevertheless, the Gemara here is just being doche because they want to get to an answer which allows us to compare Yom HaKippurim to Shabbos in the Mishnah, which we'll get to in tomorrow's daf. Gemara says, well, we know that Rabbi Yehuda holds that Muksa Malchad Yisur is a problem. That's not. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol Neirot Shel Matechet. Now we're talking about metallic utensils used for holding candles, metaltalin. Then you can carry them on Shabbos. Chutz Min HaNer Sheid Liko Bo Ba'oto Shabbat. Except for something that was a lit when Shabbos came in. If there was a candle in there and it was a fire, a flame on it coming into Shabbos, then it's muksa because it was ben hashmashot. And as Rashi points out, it's asur l'chabot et haner. You can't blow the candle out. Therefore, you have a problem of a fire that's burning in the candle, and you can't carry it around because shema yichabeh, maybe you will cause it to blow out, and therefore it becomes muksa as you come into Shabbos. That's only if it's actually lit. If it wasn't lit, then you can use it because, first of all, metal can be cleaned. It doesn't have a problem of mus, and it will be fine to be carried around on Shabbos as long as it wasn't lit. But what you say is if it was lit, then there's a problem because it's also to move it around on Shabbos, and it becomes muksa and machmat yisur. I says, but dilma shiny hotam. Maybe by the nair it's different. The how the dochile biyadayim. Over there by the nair, since you lit it on Erev Shabbos, it's as if you took it with your own hands and pushed it aside and said, I'm no longer to use this on Shabbos. It's muksa on Shabbos because I did something that now makes it a sur to move it around on Shabbos. By the behemoth, that's not the case. The behemoth, you didn't do anything. You didn't do anything to the behemoth to push it out of your realm or out of your purview. So maybe over there, even though it's usur to shecht, but maybe it's still within your world or within your frame of mind to eat it or to have it in mind, and therefore when it shechts on Shabbos, you can use it and it doesn't have a problem with muksa. So, Eino Chanami, Rabbi Yehuda holds a muksa machmat mius. He holds a muksa machmat isur, but maybe he only holds a muksa machmat isur when you do it, but you're dying, when you push it out. You do some sort of malocha that makes it that you can't utilize it on Shabbos. But over here, where by the behemoth, he had nothing in mind, he didn't even interact with it at all, maybe that would not be classified as muksa. Okay, we'll leave it tomorrow and we'll get into the case of Bishul, which is Rabbi Yehuda of Bishul, which is a three-way machloket, which will help us to explain Rab and the position in the Mishnah that we have. Okay, we'll stop here.